Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I'm Katie Rich. I'm the deputy editor of VanityFair.com. I'm on the East Coast. I'm the only person on East Coast time. So I jump back into hosting because I think I have a little bit more consciousness to share. I'm on the line in Los Angeles with our chief critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And our digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hey, Katie.
And our senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hello.
You guys, I don't know how much sleep all of you got, but probably not much. I know I was watching Mike and Richard on the red carpet at the party many short hours ago, but we'll talk about the Vanity Fair Oscar party, which Mike and Richard were attending shortly. But first of all, guys, Green Book won Best Picture. Richard, you saw this coming more than any of us, I think, but were you surprised when it actually happened?
I was, just because the night had, for the most part, been pretty satisfying in a way. And I was like, okay, like, we were so worried about this show and... you know, with no host and all this, but like, you know, all those Black Panther wins were so great. And like, I was like, maybe that's going to win. And I guess maybe the Olivia Colman win for Best Actress, which I was surprised by, but sort of ambivalent about, because on the one side, it was great for her, but sad for Glenn Close. That was probably indication that, like, you know, best laid plans, like best laid predictions were not going to kind of come to pass, you know. And yeah, so it was surprising, not surprising at the same time. I think it put kind of a weird cap on in the evening, which for the most part had been much better, I think, than people thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was a really spread out evening. Like, I think, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody won a bunch of awards in a row, and then Roma won a bunch. Alfonso Cuarón kept going up there. And it kind of felt like it was going all over the place. And like you said, Richard, like, maybe Black Panther could win. Like, anything could happen. And then ending with Green Book, which we've talked about a lot as kind of being a, you know, middle of the road, not necessarily the most popular choice. It was kind of a weird end. And then Julia Roberts, we could talk about the no host thing, but Julia Roberts being like, okay, I'm going to end the show. That was also a weird note to end on.
I think just from looking at... you know, and obviously this is my curated Twitter feed, but I feel like Green Book, at least for the people who are watching the Oscars, maybe not the people voting for the Oscars, was not just like a sort of neutral, mediocre, oh, I didn't see that coming hit. Like, a lot of people were actively very angry about this. This, like, the LA Times came out immediately with, like, this is the worst Best Picture winner in the last decade. There was all this mention of, like, Crash and also the optics of Spike Lee. You know, not that we necessarily thought Black Klansman was the front runner in this category, because we didn't, but the optics of a Spike Lee film losing 30 years later to another film about people driving and racism being solved, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and Spike Lee actively calling that out and, according to reports in the room, jumping up and trying to leave the Dolby Theater when Green Book was announced as the winner. So this is like a very, like, you know, I've seen people sort of disappointed gently with Best Picture winners before, but I have not seen anything like this, you know, before. But then again, I'm so in Twitter, I don't even know what is truth anymore sometimes. But from my own, like, curated perspective, this was a really big sour note on the whole night. So
it's a weird thing how much Twitter hates Green Book, and maybe by extension, I don't know, but a lot of people in the press really don't like it. And obviously there are some issues, some problematic issues that have been addressed, you know, in Vanity Fair and in Shadow and Act and other places. But man, when you talk to people out here, when you talk to voters, when you just talk to people who are not necessarily plugged into that world, people really like the movie a lot, you know, like,
yeah.
the host of our live stream, Karamo Brown and Kat Sadler were just like, I love this movie. I'm so glad it won. I just saw it. It made me cry. Like, you know, if you're not necessarily following every twist and turn of this whole thing, it was a crowd pleaser. Remember, it won the audience award at Toronto Film Festival. I think it is that kind of crowd pleaser that when you start to dig down, you know, into it, it gets sort of worse on closer inspection, I think is what happened to a lot of folks. But yeah, and it's funny how we did a rehearsal in the live stream right before Best Picture, And I was like, well, it was a huge night for Roma. Kind of assume, I honestly was like half paying attention and sort of thought that Roma won Best Picture when I saw Cuarón up there for director, forgetting the sequence of things. So I did live that reality for about 90 seconds.
Ted Sarandos is going to blame you for hexing them.
Yeah, I think I told Richard.
I heard you doing that because I was standing nearby and I like grabbed our video producer, Eric, and I was like, Eric, this is a rehearsal, right?
Yeah, you just like, Richard slide tackles me. But it really seemed like a huge night for Roma. And then it was sort of like, let's just talk about Olivia Colman because that was cool. And, you know, all of a sudden Green Book went from a thing that had screenplay and a supporting actor to the best picture of the night. And by the way, Black Panther had, you know, had a lot of momentum early on so that a lot of people at my table at the dinner, including this guy, Will Packer, who like predicted every award correctly. That's a whole other topic for another day. But a lot of people were saying like, we're thinking if anything upset Roma, it was going to be Black Panther. But, you know, we all knew that Green Book was like a close second. I think we were all a little bit a lot of people were in denial about it, but like Green Book has been a close second basically all along if you kept your emotions out of it.
I guess I did not keep my emotions out of it. And I like didn't even, I was genuinely shocked. I didn't even think of it as a second place. I thought it was like Roma. And then we were talking about Black Panther, Black Klansman, you know, and I was like, okay, we're maybe Bohemian Rhapsody because it's such, you know, like it's so problematic, but it's such a crowd pleaser. And I genuinely thought after the Peter Farrelly and Nick Vallelonga news hit, Green Book was done. But this is like, I keep learning this lesson every year that like Twitter canceling something does not mean the Academy has canceled it. And I need to remind me guys next year. Remind me,
it's,
please.
It's the Venn diagram is not big.
No, no,
it
I guess
really
not.
Is not.
And something that I want to talk about maybe on our second post-Oscar episode this week is the way the preferential ballot plays into this and the idea of it kind of settling on something that is the most widely liked. It comes in, you know, second place, third place on a lot of people's ballot, which seems to me like it could really benefit Green Book, whereas like something like Black Panther or Roma, you might put it at, a lot of people put it at the top, a lot of people put it at the bottom and doesn't have so much of that middle of the lane support.
I do want to mention a couple more things, and then we can definitely roll off the fact that Twitter hates Green Book and move on with our lives. But I would say that like some of the things that happened, the acceptance speeches really sort of further cemented this tension. Mahershala Ali thanked Don Shirley right off the jump in his speech, as he has throughout the whole thing. He's been very respectful towards the real-life man that he was playing, whereas the all-white screenwriting and directing and producing teams that picked up their awards, they thanked Viggo Mortensen, they thanked Carrie Fisher and all this sort of stuff, but they never mentioned Dr. Shirley's name. And backstage in the press room, in fact, Nick Vallelonga, I believe, is now spinning some kind of story about how they didn't even know Dr. Shirley had family until after they were done with the film. I mean, the story's constantly evolving in weird ways that makes me feel like with some time and distance, this win is not going to sit well with people the way that like the Crash win did not sit well with people, or I need to stop reading Twitter so much. Those two things.
Probably both.
And by the way, I think the other thing, I don't want to just dismiss it. I think that there are a lot of African-Americans who have serious problems with the movie. Not all, obviously, but, you know, a fair number. And I don't want to be dismissive of those issues and concerns either. So, you know, it was, but a great night in other ways across the board. That we talked about the Black Panther wins, like the Ruth Carter, I had a chance to just tell her, I was like, your speech was so amazing. It's something that everybody's been bringing up all night. I mean, that was super cool. You know, Spike Lee finally winning was great. He had a long line of people at the party just waiting to go and say hi to him. And so they've sure spread the wealth. That was my kind of main takeaway. And I just think people are scared of Netflix. It was, you know, they got a lot because people love Cuarón, but I just don't think people wanted to give Netflix that trophy this year, you know, and reward them for spending a lot of money. I think people are still wary of them.
Yeah, for a while there, for some of the earlier awards, it really felt like every award was being accepted by a woman or a person of color or a woman of color. The women who made Period, End of Sentence, the documentary short we talked about last week, their speech was so energetic and great. The two women who made Bao, the animated short, Ruth Carter, as you mentioned, there was like this, or even the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse speech where, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller were the white guys who started speaking. But, you know, if you've seen that movie, you know what it says about like identity and, you know, anyone can be a hero. There was just this nice feeling about that, that it did feel like the Academy was expanding its reach, even though it wound up going a little bit more traditional with its best picture pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, this is going to be a process of fits and starts and, you know, change. You know, this is a big ship and it turns slowly. I don't think that Green Book is, like, the most egregious Best Picture winner ever. I think it's not a great one. I mean, like, there's a funny clip circling the internet of Spike Lee reacting on our carpet at our party to saying why he doesn't think it's... He was annoyed that it won, which people should watch. It's a 15-second video. But there was so much positive to focus on beyond that. I think that, like, you know, speaking of Ruth Carter winning for Black Panther's costumes, Hannah Beechler winning for production design, she shared it with one other person, but giving this really beautiful speech about, you know, what Ryan Coogler reaching out to her for the role, the gig meant to her and all that stuff. Like, they were triumphant moments that were, you know, abundant in the evening that, like, I think it hopefully offset things a little bit. I think the thing that I'm, like, I mentioned it already, like, super emotionally confused about is the whole Olivia Colman, Glenn Close thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, I love The Favorite, and I loved Olivia Colman in it. I've loved her since, you know, Broadchurch or whatever, maybe a late adapter from a British perspective. But from an American perspective, I've been aware of her for a while. So that's a great thing that she won, but also, like, oh, my God, seven times. Seven times, and she was in that gold dress, and it's just
I
like,
rewatched,
oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Olivia Colman's speech, and that's like maybe the highlight. That and then like the Shallow performance are maybe the highlight of the night for me. But I rewatched her speech in the announcement a bunch of times just because there's so much to take in. Like Emma Stone's fawning over her, Yorgos Lanthimos is fawning over her. Rachel Weisz was either in the bathroom or gone because she's not in her seat, and it's funny and like all this sort of stuff. And then I just started watching Glenn Close's face over and over again.
Yes.
And like that's not a loop I suggest anyone else go on because it's like she does her best, but it's really hard. And
I actually kind of appreciate it. I thought her face had this kind of like, well, what are you going to do face
yeah,
about it? And then by the time
it cut to
her, like Olivia, like shots out, like, you know, basically knew that Glenn Close was supposed to win. It's like, I didn't want it to go this way.
Yeah, I thought her reaction was amazing. And like, if you look at our VF party photos or our party report that's up on VF.com, like, or our live stream that was on the carpet, like, Glenn showed up in a new dress, like, with a great attitude. She, like, danced, she had a dance off with Cynthia Erivo. Like, she was game face on for the VF Oscar party. So, like, I really, really respected that out of her. And that whole thing is just, like, that is so memorable to me. It's so rare, it feels like, that we get such a big surprise like that.
Yeah, I was so happy to see her come to the party and relax. It's funny, we were on the carpet again waiting for the live stream to start when Olivia Colman won. And it was just like a collective gasp of all of the press and photographers on that line. Everybody knew that Glenn Close was supposed to win. Everybody was just like, but, you know, Olivia Colman is just so lovely and cool. Her speech was so great. That was just one of those great moments that makes the show worth watching, you know?
Absolutely.
Versus sort of just ticking off boxes. You know, it's sad when somebody has to lose, but on the other hand, it's not that sad. You know, you're nominated for seven Oscars. You've had a hell of a career. You continue to have a great career. And, you know, it was nice for The Favorite to get something. It hadn't won anything up to that point, too. So that was interesting. But yeah, Olivia just killed it with that speech.
If you're gonna Zapruder, like, go through that win again, like I did many times last night, you might also want to watch. Jennifer Lopez is in like the second row or third row, something like that, and she's with A-Rod, and he just looks confused, and basically like she leans over to him, is basically like, Glenn Close is supposed to win, you know, like explaining the context of what the energy in the room is about. It's really funny. So.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segeith, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Yeah, so this show was a little bit shorter than usual. There was a lot less gimmickry, no bits because there was no host. And I thought a lot of the speeches really stepped up to the plate to make it a really great show.
Yeah, I thought that people were just sort of high energy and clever. I mean, I think those poor hair and makeup people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's the worst acceptance speech I've ever seen.
But it's kind of wonderful for how terrible it was. Why do they only have one piece of paper?
I don't know. And where were their reading glasses? Where was anything? But I think that unfortunately, because that was one of the categories that they originally weren't going to air, people were like, this is why,
I know.
But no, I thought that there were some great speeches. I think that everyone just, I mean, for the most part, everyone just seems sort of thoughtful. And I think that the people who presented the awards, credit to the producers of the show, they picked kind of unexpected people to present, Serena Williams or, a Queen Latifah. It was just and I think that Trevor Noah presenting Black Panther, that felt kind of on point. There was a spirit about the show this year, very much contrary to a lot of the kind of doomsaying that we'd been doing about what the show might be like, because it was such a mess, in the kind of lead up to it. And I think that the presenters followed suit on that kind of surprising thoughtfulness and efficiency. I mean, they let them people talk. There weren't a lot of playoffs, but no one was going overly long. So I don't know. I had a really good time watching the show, which I honestly can't say has been the case for the past few years.
Yeah, I also think it zipped along. I did want to mention really quickly that Trevor Noah, when he presented Black Panther, once again, Twitter let me know this, that in the part of his intro where he spoke in a native language, he actually said, "White people don't know that I'm lying," was what he said.
No way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. 100%.
That's really great.
So, yeah, no, I thought all the and Barbara talking about Black Klansmen and talking to Spike Lee and all of that, and everything Spike Lee was despite his Green Book frustrations, was so joyous, leaping into Samuel Jackson's arms, all of that is just fantastic stuff. Really good.
And I loved Melissa McCarthy's rabbit dress. And Brian Tyree Henry is just so cool. It was just that felt like a kind of arriving moment for him, because that was one of the things that really everybody was bringing up all night, as it was just that ridiculous rabbit dress. But it was a fun bit. And of course, Amy and Maya and Tina starting it off, sort of saving the day because they needed some jokes to kick things off. It was
good. Knowing that everyone wished that they were all hosting, and they were right. Nope, we don't need that. We'll just do this bit and leave.
And, I've been advocating all year for, the music stuff. And I admit some of the musical performances were not the most thrilling thing in the world. But that damn Shallow performance,
oh, man.
Whatever you thought of it, love it or hate it, it was, you couldn't take your eyes off of it.
Holy
it was absolutely
moly.
I loved it. I don't even love Shallow nearly as much as most people, but that was amazing. You gotta love Bradley just going for it and doing such a good job. And then there, everyone watching that was make out, you two, at the end of the song. It was incredible. It was so
good.
Some
of the people in the dinner were they couldn't handle how intense it was. You know, and somebody was just like, his girlfriend's sitting right there. I mean, it's just too much. It's too intense. It's not, that's not acting. So even some of the actors were not sure that they were acting.
And whoever decided to shoot it the way that they did, where it's all, I don't know if it was all actually one take, but it felt like it. Like, it, you know, kind of mimicked the way that it's filmed in the movie. Like, that chemistry just comes through so much when you do it like that.
I think that's something that absolutely contributed to that feeling of, like, palpability and intimacy, was that, like, it was surprisingly well-directed for a live performance like that. Like, it had intimate angles, and it was like
with the audience in the back.
It was striking, and I kind of joked on our live blog. I was like, I wonder how many Academy members, either sitting in the audience or in the theater or at home, are like, maybe I should have voted for at least one of them in their acting categories, because they're really good, you know. But that was a special moment, and I think also Gaga, when she won her Oscar for Best Original Song, like, you know, we've seen her give kind of big emotional award speeches before, going back to, you know, winning for a Golden Globe for American Horror Story, and then certainly on the circuit this season. That moment last night felt genuinely, like, it felt sincere. Like, I don't think she was performing at the emotion at all. I think it was, you know, the kind of culmination of a long, interesting, and hopefully rewarding road. And I think it was nice that Mark Ronson and everyone else kind of let her have her moment. And then, you know, he kind of stepped in at the end and was like, you can't thank yourself, but, like, thank you, because without you, there wouldn't really be this thing. So I think that, you know, Gaga had a really great night.
I loved the Gaga performance. I really liked her speech. I love the portrait she did in the Mark Seliger like photo portrait gallery at our party. It's gorgeous. But I will say that there were, like, a few backstage photos and even on our carpet photos of her, like, prostrate on the ground with the Oscar, where I was like, okay, I mean, I don't know, whatever, you won an Oscar,
she's
do whatever you want.
She's a theater kid, Joanna.
It's true.
She feels things hard.
It's true. You have
she's
your night.
She's very dramatic. She's a dramatic person.
And I'll tell you this, I held an Oscar last night, and I immediately felt, I could only equate it to the one and only time in my life that I've shot a gun, where you're just like, I have the power of the gun. I have Thor's hammer in my hand. So I don't blame anyone for doing whatever the hell they want with that thing.
I wanted to bring up that Oscar, Richard. Yeah, because I saw it on Instagram. It was the Free Solo Oscar I'm gonna pronounce her last name wrong. I don't know if you
Vasarely. Yeah. So I had a little history with the Free Solo people, in that I'd been one of the first reviews out of Telluride where it premiered, and then a couple months later last fall I did a Q&A with them on stage at Lincoln Center. So I'd met them, you know, back in October, and I guess they remembered me, which I think was really nice, and I said hi to her, and she said some nice things to me, and then I was like, I have to ask you the worst question ever. And she was like, do you want to hold it? And I was like, yes. And then, but not only did she, like, very easily relent on that point, but she just, like, kind of, like, gently took my phone and just, like, took pictures of me, which I thought was really nice. So that thing is really heavy. But, you know, going
so
back
the
to
photo
that,
was taken by an Oscar-winning director as well. Just
that's why it's framed so swankily.
That's the only kind of photo I allowed to be taken of myself. either Chai or Chivo or, you know, any of them. But
Richard had Chivo following him all night. Actually,
but going that Free Solo win was another great one. You know, I think that it was kind of unexpected. I think a lot of people thought RBG would win, and you know, while a deserving film, or, you know, I think in RBG, like, I think that Free Solo was just a nice little kind of surprise, and I think indicated another sort of way that the Academy is thinking a little differently. It afforded the opportunity for two people of color, a man and a woman, to go up and accept an award. Like,
and I love the moment where because they're married, and she mentions their kids, and, you know, mentions one of them being in the audience, and he had to, like, prompt her to name the other kid, which was just really funny.
That was great.
It was a nice like moment of humanity. Yeah, exactly. Sorry to that other kid. I'm sure that they love you both equally.
Can I do another Joanna Reed's too much outrage Twitter wet blanket comment really quickly before we move on to more positivity? Which is just to mention that, like, Bryan Singer's name was not that I wanted to hear Bryan Singer's name, but, like, the whole Bryan Singer thing wasn't even, like, alluded to during Bohemian Rhapsody's four wins last night. And that, I mean, like, I don't know how you do it gracefully on stage. I don't know. But I do know that I think a lot of people were frustrated to see that. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, the one that was most glaring to me, I mean, well, I didn't unfortunately really get to watch Rami Malek's speech because we were, you know, backstage at the party doing a bunch of kind of preppy stuff. But, like, when it won Best Editing, it's like, how the fuck do you think or, like, do a speech about that movie without, as an editor, without acknowledging the director? I don't know. It kind of clanged most loudly, I think, during that moment. But, you know, I guess what could they really do?
We talked about Spike Lee a bunch as kind of like the MVP for reaction shots and him hugging Samuel L. Jackson. Did you see that Trump tweeted about him? He managed to get a rise out of Trump, which I feel like is the goal for anyone in a political award speech.
What did he say?
Without even saying his name. Spike Lee didn't say Trump's name, but Trump tweeted, "Be nice if Spike Lee could read his notes, or better yet, not have to use notes at all when doing his racist hit on your president, who has done more for African Americans, criminal justice reform, lowest unemployment numbers in history, tax cuts, etc., than almost any other prez." So that was Donald Trump's.
Congratulations, Spike Lee.
That was Donald Trump's 3:50 a.m., so probably like 6:50 a.m. East Coast time, reaction to the Oscars. That's his hot take.
Cool.
There you go. Good for him.
I mean, Spike ending his speech about the, like, mentioning the 2020 election and then saying, "Do the right thing." Like, I kind of want Kamala Harris's slogan to be just "Do the right thing" for the 2020
election. Get Kamala Harris the brass knuckles with love and hate on them and send
her
on the campaign trail.
She can wear them. She's the best. Yeah.
So maybe let's wrap up talking about the show itself, just with how we felt about it as a show. We said it went kind of fast. The speeches were great. I think there'll be a lot of discussion in the days to come about whether or not the Oscars actually need a host. Do you guys have any gut reactions on whether they were better off? I mean, you know, Kevin Hart aside, with any host, would any host have made the show better?
I thought it was a really good show, and I think that the hostlessness of it, I didn't really miss. I think that it you know, with the kind of Amy Mayatina opening and a couple other bits throughout, like if you have like charming and funny people kind of do a few hits throughout the broadcast, like it kind of works out okay. Like maybe there was, I mean, like there was certainly a lot of stuff to talk about this year and or last year in movies that didn't get hit on, you know, kind of at the top because there was not like a monologue. And maybe I missed that a little bit. But I think that not having the host, it did trim down on the time without skimping on the sort of Oscar-y details. So I didn't mind it. I talked to a few people at our party that felt a bit differently about the way the show flowed and whatnot. But I was pretty engaged, and I, you know, did appreciate that it got in just over 3 hours.
I think maybe if they had, I mean, I know they were not the hosts, but maybe if they had brought Tina, Amy, and Maya back up to like say goodnight rather than Julia Roberts being like, "Welp, guess
that's a good idea."
Then, you
some
know,
kind of like closing the loop.
Yeah, they could have easily come up with a very tiny bit, just one final like goodbye, and then it just feels like a button on it, you know. But I agree with Richard that I don't think you needed them like throughout or any host throughout. Though I think Keegan-Michael Key and Trevor Noah were like a weed host when they were on our party red carpet, and
Keegan-Michael Key descended from the ceiling. That man is game. He will do what you need him to do.
He was like, "Jordan Peele's got an Oscar. I can get there. It's fine."
Can we talk about the presenter pairs and how they put people together? I thought they did such a great job of making them really fun groups of people you want to see together.
Yeah, they did. And like, it wasn't like the most A-listy in a way, but I think that made it more interesting.
Yeah, like Awkwafina and John Mulaney. They stood out for me as just like, like you never thought you wanted to see them together, but they were wonderful.
Jason Momoa was with who was Jason Momoa with again?
Helen Mirren.
That was amazing. What a combo.
Well, they're old school friends though. I mean,
they went to Oxford. Together. Yeah. Constance Wu and Chadwick Boseman also.
Who was with James McAvoy? I remember that being a good pair.
It was Danai Gurira. They did.
Yeah,
sound.
They were great.
It was really cute.
They did all the ASMR stuff. Yeah, with the sound. Yeah,
it was really cute. I will say that I just want to like pat ourselves on the back. I think overall, I mean, at least for me, our predictions for short films were 3 for 3. So good job, you guys.
Yes, that's never happened. I think usually we do the show and we're like, "God, we watched all the shorts and we got them all wrong."
I know, we got them this year.
Talking me out of the Nazi thing was good. Whoever did that, thank you.
LA private schools.
You mean talking you out of becoming a Nazi?
No, the white nationalist rally short film that we almost voted for. That's the old Academy. The new Academy watches feminist short films on Netflix.
On menstruation. And then the people who are over at my house, like I immediately showed them Period, End of Sentence and Bow because they were like so excited and interested because those winners, those women who went up and won were so cute and infectious. And so it was like, they, you know, the people who were at my house were like, "We want to watch those." I was like, "Well, I can hook you up right now." So anyway, if you're listening to this, watch Period, End of Sentence on Netflix and find Bao elsewhere. I don't know where.
Yeah, I think that the hostlessness was, it did kind of work, but I don't know. It also felt a little bit unmoored. So I didn't miss the giant, bloated, like corny set piece at the beginning and all of the sort of like the kind of overlong intrusions over time, but it maybe that would have just been nice for somebody to come back and end it, Tina, Amy, Maya. But I don't know that I would just suggest doing this every year exactly, but maybe there's a happy medium or something.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's jump into talking about the party. Joanna, you were up watching all the action take place. Mike and Richard, you guys were there. I had to go to bed at some point. So I saw you guys both on the live stream. You were wonderful, along with Kat Sadler and Cromo Brown. But what'd you see inside? What's all the gossip?
You know, it was funny. It was my first time going. And I think I made my way into the room or the rooms where the party were for the first time, maybe about an hour in. And I was like, oh, this, you know, it's not that, it's lively, but it wasn't like full. And I was like, I don't know, maybe this year's different. Of course, it would be my first year when people don't show up. I was wrong to worry, but you know, 45 minutes later, the place was absolutely packed and packed with like every other face you looked at. You were like, oh, that's blank. You know, I think at one point I was standing in a room with like Jeff Bezos and Barbara Streisand and Anita Hill and Natalie Portman. And I was like, oh, okay, sure.
They were all talking about the movie they're making together.
Yeah. This is a dream I had once. And it looked lovely. And, you know, for a first timer, I was pretty wide-eyed and just kind of taking in the scene. But I did get a nice chance to talk to some people, like I already mentioned. And I think we did good. And I think the Seliger photos look incredible. I think that we got off to a wonderful early start with that striking photo of Selma Blair and kind of went from there. Lady Gaga's is amazing. It just seemed to be good. I talked to, I won't mention a certain article from a certain other publication, but just to, you know, contradict it, I did talk to a lot of people at the party who were like, this is the best, you know, effing party of the year. So, and I think that we proved that supposition right.
Yeah, man, it was like packed in a great way, in a good way, not in the kind of bad way. It did get to a little bit of a slow start, and then it just rolled. And there was like a traffic jam on the red carpet for quite a while of people waiting, you know, for their turn to stand on the kind of big carpet coin and be photographed. And in fact, you know, for the live stream, Richard and I were supposed to do more hits, and so were a bunch of other Vanity Fair people. And in the best way, we all just got canceled because Kat and Karamo just had too many celebrities to talk to. So it was really fun. People were having a great time. Glenn Close was dancing up a storm in the back. At one point, you know, Lady Gaga had one of those sort of gravitational patterns around her that you have to be like really, really, really super famous to produce. And yeah, just everywhere you look. It's funny, Katie, you tweeted that picture of Michael B. Jordan and Lupita and a bunch of people holding In-N-Out burgers. And I definitely have a mouthful of burger in that picture. And, you know, it was just that kind of night. It was really fun. You know, I think people can just look at the pictures and see all the celebrities that came through. But it was also fun. I got to meet the screenwriter of BlacKkKlansman. And he let us take a picture with him and his Oscar, and saw the Free Solo folks, saw Nicholas Britell, and I were catching up because I had met him on The Big Short. Just everybody's in a really good mood and partying and having fun. Got to meet Spike and pay tribute to him. Regina King came in late and took a picture with Mark Seliger, and as did Olivia Colman, and Cuaron was like you know, in this kind of, I mean, nobody looked disappointed. Everybody looked like they were having a great time. And I think it was the way that the Oscars sort of spread the wealth, I think, enabled everybody to go out and feel good about it. No, I don't think anybody was nursing wounds, really.
I was so glad that Frances McDormand once again seemed to be the person having the most fun at the party. Last year, she memorably stole a bucket of fried chicken and walked around. And in Julie Miller's party report, it mentioned that she showed up in a different pair of Birkenstocks than the ones she wore to the Oscars, which I love because she prefers comfort. And she took one of them off to show Elizabeth Debicki her shoes, which is I just have such a great, clear mental image of this. It just seems wonderful. I love that, you know, she can come. She had no pressure on her whatsoever and was like, no, I'm coming to the party. I don't need to get my photo taken. I'm just going to come and be comfortable and have a great time.
Yeah, and not to encourage people not to go glam for the Oscar party, because I love looking at Kendall Jenner's pelvic bones or whatever it is that you see at that party. But Tina Fey showed up in Converse, and I think she name dropped she or Maya Rudolph, one of them name dropped the Birkenstock, the Frances McDormand Birkenstocks, as inspiration for her putting on Converse. And then of course you've got Melissa McCarthy and her husband in these matching Adidas tracksuits that they wore. They bling themselves out. They were dripping with diamonds, but wearing these tracksuits. And I was like, that's great. That's a great way to party. Way to go.
Those tracksuits were really MVP. That was so good.
So
yeah, I recommend looking through the photos because there's a lot of people who weren't at the Oscars who show up at our party just wearing incredible things. Cynthia Erivo has this amazing architectural gown on and this makeup job. Elizabeth Debicki, I guess everyone from Widows just showed up really dressed to kill. I didn't see Lupita at the Oscars. She might have been there, but I never saw her in the audience. But she
was
wore
there.
This,
yeah.
Okay, this wonderful white feather thing that I saw for the first time in our party photos. You know, Kendall Jenner wasn't at the Oscars. She's wearing this incredibly daring dress. The fashion is really something to see.
Yeah, it was funny with Debicki because when I first got to the party, I was like, is that Elizabeth Debicki? And I was like, Richard, who else would it be? She's
who else is 6'3" and beautiful?
Of course it's her. And our own Brit Hennemuth talked to her for a long time. And everyone looked good. I liked the kind of conversions. You know, Kacey Musgraves was wearing, the country singer, was wearing a sort of semi-controversial, big fluffy pink thing at the actual show, but then showed up at our party in a much, you know, a sort of slimmer bronze kind of thing that was a great look. And it was just fun to see people in their sort of second act of the evening. I think that for a first time, I think that it was such a good showing of people. And I think you're right, Mike, that because there was a sort of wealth spread in terms of the winners, the mood didn't seem one of no one was should we be here? Should we be having fun? Because blank happened. You know, people seemed for the most part happy enough with certain things that won. You know, I talked to Franklin Lettern, who is, you know, the creator of the Blacklist, the screenplay thing. And that organization now does a lot more. They've gotten into producing movies, you know, and we were kind of comparing notes about what we thought of the show. And we came to the same conclusion, which was that there were some, you know, not so great stuff, but some also really exciting things. And that mood kind of was the one that prevailed.
Well, just think about how many years after the first Oscar So White thing, it really is a transformed show, thank God, you know, and during the dinner, I sat for the first, I was the first timer actually sitting at the dinner after 13 years or however many times I've done this.
You were at the grown-ups table finally?
At the grown-ups table for the first time ever. Got to hang out with Ron Howard, who has a really good theory for how to fix the Oscars, but I'm not going to share it because I don't.
Ron Howard, come on, Little Gold Man, we need this.
But it was so. By the way, it was just so cool hanging out with Ron Howard. Of course, after six decades in the business, he's the nicest, smartest, most down to earth person. But in that room, Shonda Rhimes and Tracy Ellis Ross and a bunch of other folks were cheering when Regina King won, cheering when Ruth Carter won. There was a lot to cheer about. It was really, really cool. And so I think that, yeah, I think there were good vibes. Different people have different favorite movies, but it wasn't the kind of night where it was it wasn't fighting words. It was just all right, well, this is my favorite, that's yours, okay. And everybody had something to celebrate, which was cool.
Well, that might be a good note to end it on, because we'll have another Oscars episode that we'll be recording later this week. We'll catch up with people who are at the awards and kind of get more perspective on it. Any parting thoughts before we save it for a couple days from now?
This is a completely random thing, but at the party, I met Lana Condor from To All the Boys I've Loved Before, the big Netflix movie. And I was like, oh, are you having fun? And she was like, yeah, I really, really want to introduce myself to. And I was like, what's she going to say? You know, Barbara Streisand, whatever. She's like, Adam Scott. Like, girl, you'll be fine. Go do it. Like that. If not here, where? Like,
did she do it?
I don't know. I didn't end up seeing her after that. But I hope so. I hope she had her moment.
She and Awkwafina showed up together, and it seemed like, you know, like friends who are going to this like kind of big scary thing for the first time together, and just in solidarity. It was really sweet. I love our VF red carpet live stream, not just for like getting to see Richard and getting to see Mike talk about everything, but also just, I don't know, it's such a different red carpet vibe than pre-Oscars. The post-Oscars, like, woo, it's over, like, time to party vibe is so fun to watch. So I'm a big fan. All right, well, we lost Katie at the last second to a baby, but you can find her on Twitter at Katie Rich. Richard, where can people find you?
At Rylaws.
Mike.
Mike _ Hogan.
And I'm at Joe Wrote This. This early morning reaction episode was edited and produced by Brett Fuchs, and the award for Kevin Feige's reaction to the first Marvel comic book movie winning an Oscar goes to Richard Lawson.
I have Thor's hammer in my hands.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gecs, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.